Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
On Monday we did the mystery, the Molehill mystery, a murder in Molehill in the early 1920s. The local doctor, Dr. Muldoon, was murdered in shot point blank range. It was alleged and fairly convincingly proved that the local priest, Father Edward Ryans, R-Y-A-N-S, also from the area, had organised the killing of Dr. Muldoon because Dr. Muldoon had discovered and had knowledge about the fact that Father Ryan's housekeeper, a very young woman, 17-year-old, Kate Galugli, had fallen pregnant, and that the padre was the father, so to speak. And in turn, when Kate gave birth to the young girl in Dublin, the baby, Father Ryan's then headed to Dublin, and with Kate set about to abandon, he was much older by the way, he set out to abandon the child up at the Black Church there just off Dominic Street in Dublin. They were rumbled by three local women and caught. The baby was rescued and brought to a mother and baby home, so to speak. Kate was whisked off into an asylum eventually, believe it or not, and the priest was acquitted of abandoning the child. But Dr. Muldoon knew about this, and Dr. Muldoon would have been giving evidence to say that Kate had come to him, he discovered she was pregnant, and that the priest had subsequently come and said, could he organise a termination, believe it or not. So it was very damaging. So Dr. Muldoon, the mystery still stands. It is still unsolved to this day. And a number of people, when we were talking about that mystery, and by the way, Molehill apparently in County Leitrim has a main street. Apparently it's split right down the middle still, nearly 100 years later, over this murder. Some believe the priest was involved. Some believe the priest was not involved. Some believe it was an anti-church thing. Some believe it was the power of the church and collusion with the state that meant that Father Ryan's escaped conviction. And then a number of people contacted us and said there was a book out a number of years ago about a missing postman down in Waterford, and that was a murder around the same time. The only difference is that the body of the missing postman was never found. Now, Fáchan O'Driscoll from our building here, from Radio on the Gaeltacht, is also an author and broadcaster, and he has written and made a documentary and written about the story of the missing postman. Fáchan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It brings us back, Christmas Day 1929, Stradbally, County Waterford.
Yeah, Christmas Day 1929. Unusually, Joe, most people don't realise, postmen used to work on Christmas Day in those years. So Larry Griffin, he was the postman, his round took him from Kilmac Thomas to Stradbally and back again, and he went out on his rounds on Christmas Day, but he never came home to his wife and family in Kilmac Thomas. And now, it would have been usual, of course, for the postman as he was doing rounds on Christmas Day to be offered the hospitality of their various houses, yeah, a glass of whiskey, a bottle of beer, even brought in for Christmas dinner. So I suppose when he didn't come home at first, you know, it was thought he may have been sleeping it off in a friend's house.
Yeah.
But then as the days, obviously the next day went by, and the days went by, obviously, it was realised that something had gone wrong. It was thought his bicycle was discovered out in the road, 2 miles out from Stradbally. There was concern perhaps he'd wandered off the road and fallen into a bog hole. So the search, you know, widened. And the guards, there was a local guard station, but the disappearance of a postman is serious business. So the chief superintendent came in from Waterford to investigate. And then he was questioning the local guards very closely about Larry Griffin's last movements on Christmas Day. One of the local priests came to him and told him that the local guards themselves were somehow involved in the disappearance. And then it turned out that the local guards were telling lies about their movements on Christmas Day. It turned out that one of them, in fact, was the last person who had been seen with Larry Griffin, and that Larry Griffin had been drunk and had disappeared around the corner in Stradbally in the company of this guard around the corner of a public house known as Whelan. The guard denied he'd gone into the public house, but it seemed that he had. And eventually, a local labourer, a man of no property and no importance, he was called in for questioning by the guard, and he gave them an extraordinarily vivid statement, which is still available in the Garda archives.
And this is Jim Greeny, known also as Jim Fitzgerald. Is that
exactly
right?
Exactly. Okay. Jim Fitzgerald, his proper name. Jim Greeny was what he was known as locally. And he alleged that he had been in the public house on the night of Christmas Day, along with many of the other people, the local school teacher, three of the local guards, farmers. As you know yourself, Joe, it wasn't legal to be in the pub on Christmas Day, but as we know, in large parts of rural Ireland, lots of the important people in the community would have been allowed in on Christmas Day. And he said that the postman was there and that a row had occurred between the postman and another man called Ned Morrissey, and that over some coins, and the postman had queues that had fallen from the postman on the floor, and there was a bit of a scuffle. Mm-hmm. The postman had accused Ned Morrissey of taking his money. The postman was knocked down, hit his head off the stove, the cast iron stove, and was killed.
Wow.
And you have to remember, Joe, these guards drinking illegally in the pub on Christmas Day, this teacher drinking illegally in the pub on Christmas Day, this publican, and a man gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
What are the consequences for them?
Their
careers are going to be destroyed. The publican is going to lose his license. The teacher is going to lose his job. At least the guards, and possibly there may possibly be criminal charges.
Mm-hmm.
So they all, according to this statement, conspired to cover up what had happened.
Wow!
And the guards took his bicycle out and planted it on the road, according to the statement. And the teacher, who had the only motor car in the village, took the body away to be disposed of. And that was the story that he told under questioning to the guards.
And where has Larry Griffin's body ever been found?
No, Larry Griffin's. What happened after that was that, of course, there was the 10 local people were arrested. The guards kept looking for the body. They brought them to court for a preliminary hearing. They put their star witness, Jim Fitzgerald, on the stand.
Okay.
All they had was this star witness. They had no body. And when they put him on the stand in Waterford, huge crowds, media, journalists from overseas, huge international interest in the case, he wouldn't stand by his statement on the stand. And they pushed him and pushed him, but he took back everything he'd said. He said he hadn't been in the pub at all that night and that he hadn't seen any of these things. The case dragged on for a while. They were allowed to remand the people in custody. There was huge searches for the body. They constructed a huge dredging apparatus over a mine shaft and spent weeks trying to dredge it. And there was thousands of people coming from all over Ireland to come and look at it. There was bus tours even coming to look at this. Most amazingly, in the middle of the night, there was a party of guards who spent a whole fortnight going around local graveyards, digging up, would you believe, recently buried bodies, opening the coffins, removing the corpses, and looking underneath the corpses to see if the bodies were there. And they did this secretly in the middle of the night for a fortnight.
And the distress for those families of the people who were in the coffins.
But they did it secretly, you see.
This
was done. This is the whole point. I mean, I presume today you would have court orders and you would have huge palaver about it. They did it in the dead of night secretly so that none of this would happen. They dug up a whole beach, every single square inch of it. They searched a bog. There was huge expenditure on this case because it was seen even more serious than an ordinary disappearance or an ordinary killing, because you have to remember this was the 1929, the anti-treaty IRA was still active. A postman had indeed been killed by the IRA the previous year in County Clare, because postmen were seen as agents of the state, and sometimes they were falsely accused of being informers. And so the state itself took the case very seriously, because any attack on a postman, just like a guard, was seen as being a very serious attack on the state itself. And indeed, one of the chief suspects, the person who was suspected of being the ringleader in all of this, Thomas Cashin, was himself reputedly a member of the IRA.
And how do they manage, Faulkner, if there's 10 people conspiring, at least 10 conspiring to keep this a secret and to dispose of the postman's body, how come none of them broke, or none of them on their deathbed, or none of them had a masking conversion, or
the first
Pauline
thing to remember,
conversion, or
the first thing to remember is that, first of all, while there was a lot of people present in the pub, the body apparently was taken away in the motor car. Motor cars in those days, if you had a body in the back seat, they wouldn't have fitted into the boot or the trunk. Mm-hmm. So there would have only been space for the teacher and one other person. So it's possible that only a smaller group of people actually knew where the body was disposed of.
Okay.
But this isn't such an unusual thing in mm-hmm. Ireland. There are many other cases from the Troubles, the most recent Troubles in the 70s and 80s, and the Troubles in the early 1920s. For example, some of the Protestants who were killed in West Cork in, I think it was 1922, by anti-treaty elements of the IRA, some of those bodies were never mm-hmm. returned to their relatives. So people can and do, in Ireland, historically, people can and do go to their deathbeds without revealing the whereabouts of disappeared bodies.
And you mentioned recently, there's probably the most famous case I'm thinking of is the murder of Robert McCartney in 2005 in the pub in Belfast, where there was 40 or 50 people in the pub and nobody exactly. said they were there.
Exactly.
Now, you, Faulkner, when you did your book, which is called The Missing Postman, still available, great book, it's a page-turner. When you did your book and your radio piece and this and you had other coverage as well, did you get any more information from the fallout from it, so to speak?
Yeah, I suppose when the book was published, I described the dominant theory, and there was various theories about where the body was, but the dominant theory in local folklore was that the body was brought to a place called Ballyvoyle, near Ballyvoyle Bridge, where there was road work going on.
Okay.
And that it had been buried, basically, in the road. And then the next day, the lads came along doing the road work, had tarmacadamed over it.
Oh.
And at the time I wrote the book, I treated this story with caution, as I had no other evidence to back it up.
Okay.
It didn't appear at all, and I had access to the Garda files from the early 1930s. It didn't appear at all in the Garda files from the time, and there were copious notes of the various theories about the case in those files. So I suppose I was cautious about the story. But afterwards, myself and Seamus Mulrennan, grandson of the missing postman, had an idea, and we went to the archive of Waterford County Council, and we discovered there evidence that a contractor was indeed being paid, hadn't been contracted to resurface, probably for the first time, to put a hard surface on that particular road at that particular time, which seems very coincidental.
So what? How long is the stretch of road that was being tarmacadamed around the time of the murder?
The killing. The Ballyvoyle Road, I mean, obviously the contractor was surfacing a longer stretch of road, but that particular road leading down to Ballyvoyle Bridge was being tarmacadamed at that particular time. I couldn't tell you what length. It's a few years since I saw the note. I couldn't tell you exactly what length of road he was tarmacadding, but it included that section of road heading down to Ballyvoyle Bridge and near the site of the historical Ballyvoyle ambush.
Okay, Bridie is there, the daughter-in-law of Larry Griffin. Bridie, sorry, is Bridie there? Bridie, I don't know your second name at the moment. How are you, Bridie?
I'm very well, thank you.
Okay. It's good to hear from you. And I know you contact us because you're very anxious, because it's the 90th anniversary of the death of your husband's grandfather. Your husband's father, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're anxious for some resolution. You're a good age yourself. You'd be 99 a few weeks after the 90th anniversary.
That's right.
You were around 9 at the time.
Yes.
Did you grow up with this story, Bridie?
I did. I can remember, yes.
And what was being said about it locally?
I can remember all the commotion and papers and people talking about it, you know. At 9 years, you remember all these things.
You were born at 21 and it happened in 1929.
Yeah.
Now, was there much talk in the family about it, Bridie? What happened, Larry?
Back then, there was everybody asking questions, you know, and trying mm-hmm. to get a bit of information, buying papers and watching everything from one day to the next, like, you know.
And did people know this story of the cover up, the 10 or 11 people in the pub coming together and deciding to get rid of poor Larry's body.
Well, sure, in the beginning they didn't realise that. It's only later on when nothing happened that they realised that there was a cover up there, you see.
And I presume you'd still like to try and find where Larry's remains are.
I would, yeah.
And why is that, Bridie? Such a long time.
I don't know. It's just something I would like to know before I take a step any further, like, you know. Okay.
And I know you would have been 9, but did you ever remember meeting Larry Griffin?
Oh, no, I never met him, no.
Yeah, because you subsequently married his son.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, after Larry was killed, he was the income earner. He was working on Christmas Day,
for example.
Yeah. That's such a hard worker. How did the family fare in terms of income and money?
Oh, that's the big question. There was no income, sure, because Jack, his son, he was serving his time in Waterford, mm-hmm. and he was just finished his time in mechanic, and he had no job really, he was just serving his time, but he had to come home then and get a job.
So there was no pension or no...
She had no pension.
Oh, well,
somebody
God.
Said that the widow's pension didn't come in until...
The 1930s, yeah.
Until 1930s.
Yeah.
And it would have she wouldn't have got a widow's pension because she wasn't a widow at that time.
And so how many children did Larry have? Obviously one boy because you married him.
Two girls and boy.
Ah, you married. Okay. Yeah. And you'd like it. And is your husband, am I presuming he's not alive still, Bridie?
No, he's dead since 1983.
Okay. And would you, I presume the family would like his father buried with his son or his wife
definitely.
Or whatever.
That's all his wife ever wanted was to have him buried in the graveyard in Newtown, you know.
And do you know when your mother-in-law, when did she die, Bridie, do you know? Larry's wife.
Sure, she died, what's that, the year? Oh, she's dead about 20 years.
So the family are still anxious to inter the remains of Larry into that grave. And what do you think of Faulkner? So he's done great work on a Faulkner, I'll just go.
Oh, wonderful man, altogether, yeah.
And but this theory now, and he's got more, I think the family were involved in it as well. They've got archive since the book and the radio programme. They've got information that there were roadworks in that particular spot at that particular time. Do you know that's portion of road that they're talking about, Bridie?
I do, I know that well, yes.
And how do you feel when you pass over it?
I always remember him when I pass over, always.
Is there a little plaque or anything to him there?
No, there's not, no.
Is there a plaque or any memorial to him anywhere, Bridie?
No, and just his name is on the tombstone where his wife is buried now.
Oh,
like,
his name is on the headstone, but he's not. His remains aren't there.
Yeah.
Okay. And Bridie, have you been working at this? You've never given up.
No,
you're fantastic. Fantastic. Oh. It's a terrible circumstance.
Yes.
And what did you ever remember your mother-in-law talking about your father-in-law?
Oh,
what was he like as a husband and a man?
Yeah. She told me hundreds of times. I heard that story so often because we lived with her for a year or two before when we got married, before we got our own house, you know. And she often spoke about it.
And what did she say? What type of man was Larry?
Oh, sure, my God, they were really a very happy family, you know.
Yeah.
He was supposed to come home late that evening to give money to the lads, to Jack to go to the dance and all this kind of
Christmas
thing, you know.
Christmas night dance, yeah.
Yeah.
What a tragedy.
Yeah.
What a tragedy.
Yeah.
Stay with us, Bridie. Councillor Maeve O'Connell has contacted us. And Maeve, what's your connection to this? I never heard this connection. Go ahead, Maeve, your connection to this tragedy.
Yes. I am the granddaughter of Harry O'Mara, who was one of the investigating guards.
Wow. And do you remember your granddad talking about it?
It's a family story that we've all been told about.
Wow.
And we still talk about it at family gatherings. And it was very interesting to listen to Bridie bring the human aspect to
it. The living connection.
Yeah.
And that was like when we did the Mohill story and people said on Monday, it's 1923, was it? It's so long ago, we'll never get anyone. No, we haven't got anyone in Mohill, but we did get a phone call from Gladys, or we did talk to Gladys Locke on Monday. He was 103 And she was alive during, she was a teenager during that period, and she remembers the whole Civil War period and the atmosphere. But it's also, it's worth pointing out in terms of history, that Gladys Locke, when she was on Monday, revealed that she's 103, obviously, and her aunts and relations, some of them lived till 98. So that means that some of Gladys's family were alive during the famine. People think the famine is hundreds of years ago. So we were only, in that sense, talking to Gladys. Gladys in turn would have been, we were talking to her on Monday, but she in turn, years ago, would have been talking to people who lived through the famine. But that's the whole aspect of living history. Okay, did your grandfather, the investigating Garda, put forward any theory that you were aware of, Maeve, of what happened to Larry Griffin?
No, he didn't. And sort of like Bridie, it's one of these things that in the family, we always hoped that the body would eventually be found, that we'd all eventually find out what happened.
Yeah.
Because my grandfather was concerned about, and Faulkner mentioned it as well, about a travesty of justice.
Yeah.
And that an individual was effectively being set up, potentially to be the fall guy for this incident.
And who do we think that was? Was that...
that's a fact now that I can't remember. But there is also a famous story in the family of how he stood up to Owen O'Duffy up at the Garda Barracks in the Phoenix Park.
The Garda Commissioner.
Yeah, the Garda Commissioner at the time.
Yeah.
Arguing that we needed to investigate this case properly, and if we didn't find somebody, we didn't find somebody, and we would have to accept that.
This was your grandfather arguing with the Commissioner.
My grandfather arguing with O'Duffy, yeah.
To make this a priority to find out what happened to this man.
To find out what happened, and you know, and if you couldn't find the person to accept that, bad and all of that was, because there was that pressure to try and get it solved and potentially to convict the wrong person.
That incredible. And I presume what was swirling round is this story that there was a number of Gardaí in the pub when the death occurred.
That's it. Well, all the local players were in the pub at the time.
Yeah.
So, we were always told that there was really no... It was always seen that it was probably an accident. But because everybody was there, that everybody would be damaged.
And there'd be panic. And as Faulkner has outlined there. Let me say there, Maeve. Mike Finnerty. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And how are you related to Larry Griffin?
Well, my mum, Marie Mulrennan, granddaughter of Larry Griffin, the missing postman. So
okay, Mike, your phone line, I think, is coming to me from 1929 at this stage. It sounds so distant. We'll try and get a better line. We're talking about, it's in the context of the earlier, the Mohill murder, the mystery of that murder on Monday, and now we're talking about the mystery of the killing, the death. As people have outlined, they don't believe it was a murder, but his body has never been recovered, of a postman working on Christmas Day in 1929 in Stradbally, County Waterford. Larry Griffin, 51551, back after this.
Talk to
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking about the mysterious death of a postman in 1929 in the pub in Stradbally Christmas Day, and the fact that his body has never been found, that nobody has ever been charged or indeed convicted, obviously, of the killing, and the mystery still remains. And Faulkner Driscoll from this parish has been working on it for a number of years. He published a book, he made a radio documentary, and I think he made a television programme as well, if memory serves me. But Faulkner has also discovered since the book there's been a new development, that is, he's confirmed that there were, through the archives of Waterford County Council, that there were roadworks being pursued or executed in that area, in the particular stretch of road. And now the theory is, because everywhere else was searched, mines, beaches, everything, the theory is that the remains of Larry Griffin are under one particular stretch of road in County Waterford. And Bridie Griffin, who's in her 99th year, she'll be 99 in January, Bridie Griffin is Larry Griffin's daughter-in-law, and Bridie has been talking to us what she remembers of the way the story was told, because she was 9 when it happened. Councillor Maeve O'Connell contacted us, and she is the granddaughter of the investigating Garda. And Mike Finnerty, is your relation to Larry Griffin, is Mike?
Yes, sure. Larry Griffin was my great-grandfather. My mum, Marie, the granddaughter of Larry Griffin, and by sheer coincidence, we were actually in Kilmacthomas only a few days ago down to visit our relations, and from listening there to Faulkner and to Bridie and yourself as well, at times it sounds almost surreal and it sounds like a work of fiction, but you only have to sit with Bridie and her sons, Leo and Willie, and my own mum as well, to realise just how much of an impact the events of 90 years ago have had on the family and how deep a scar it has left, I suppose, and how dark the cloud is that sits over the Griffin family to this very day.
And your mother would have been Larry's granddaughter. So did she recall, how did the family get on? The surviving three children, apparently one child had predeceased Larry, two girls and a boy, and obviously the widow. How did they manage, Mike, when they got no compensation? There was no body, no compensation, it seems, no widow's pension didn't exist. How did they fare?
Well, there was no doubt from listening to Bridie just literally a few days ago talk about it and recall those days that it was very, very difficult for the surviving members of the family. And it was something that wasn't spoken about in the house, either in my mother's house or in the Griffin's house when they grew up. It was something that I think was too painful to talk about. Mm-hmm. And by and large, they just had to get on with it. And really, it's only since Faulkner brought out the book and began to research and went back to the archives that I and my brother and our generation have been made aware of what exactly might have happened and just how much of an impact it had on the family. But there's no doubt with the 90th anniversary now coming up on Christmas Day, there is a huge sense among the Griffin family that they would really love if there was somebody out there who knows something or who may have heard something over the years to come forward, even at this stage, because they just really want Larry Griffin to be at peace. They want the memories, I suppose, at this stage to be laid to rest. And while there is a headstone, as Bridie said, up in Newtown, we went to see it only the other day, it really is just a marker for Larry Griffin. There was no body found. There is no grave where they can go and mourn him properly.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt to this very day, it remains a very painful story for all of the family.
And Faulkner, was there any talk of trying to use modern technology to search this road? I'm thinking of the Tune Babies and searching for remains that could be there an awful long time.
Yeah, in fairness, there was a very good company. It's quite a number of years now, so I can't remember their name, I'm sorry, but there was a very good company who specialised that, who actually did a geophysical survey for the family on a pro bono basis on a stretch of road there. But they had never done it before on a road, on a hard surface. Okay. Normally, you see, when these are done on fields or on that kind of ground, and it's very difficult to do it on a road surface. And even, as you know yourself, these kind of geophysical surveys, they're not like you see in the movies, like it's kind of an X marks the spot or an X-ray and you see a skeleton in it. It's more like indications, and we're talking, or anomalies in the reading, so it's quite hard. They're not going to come and say to you, look, we found a body, They'll say, well, there's an anomaly in the ground here, or there's an anomaly in the ground there. But we're talking about a mile-long stretch of road. Like, when we say near the Ballyvoyle Bridge or near the site of the Ballyvoyle ambush, what does near mean?
Yeah. And Faulkner, do we know, it's 90 years since that road is tarmacked. Has it been re-tarmacked in the meantime, or is it due to be re-tarmacked, which would be more interesting?
I have no idea. I would imagine, looking at it, it has definitely been re-tarmacked in the meantime, but I couldn't tell you if it's due to be re-tarmacked.
Let me bring in Liam Harkin. Liam, another connection, a fascinating connection. Liam, what is your connection with the death, so to speak, the mysterious death of Larry Griffin?
Yeah, my connection was my father was one of the Gardaí that was brought in from outside to investigate the incident. We'll use the word incident.
Okay.
And as a result of pressure from on high, he and two others were very enthusiastic about their questioning of the witness. Mm-hmm. And they succeeded in getting a statement out of him.
Which, do we know? Is this Jim Greeny, Jim Fitzgerald?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He subsequently withdrew his statement in court.
Yeah.
And anyway, as a result of that investigation, the three boys were charged with assault. Subsequently, they were charged with assault and convicted. And they were sacked.
So your father, lost his job. Wow. And what age was he, Liam? Do you know?
My father at the time.
Yeah.
1929. He was born in 03. He was 22 or 23 years of age.
And he lost his livelihood.
He lost his livelihood. Probably justifiably so at the time, but it transpired afterwards. There was a change in government in, I think it was the 32 or 33.
32, De Valera, came in.
Yeah, there was the oath. There was a coalition government came into power, and he was subsequently reinstated. He lost his rank, but he was subsequently reinstated.
Wow.
And the reason that they were sacked, which is a matter of record, is that as a result of the conviction, they were fined, I don't know, was it £100 or whatever it was at the time, but they went bankrupt rather than pay the fine. They weren't able to pay the fine.
So that means you lost your job,
as a result of going bankrupt.
Like if a TD goes bankrupt, you lose your...
that was it.
Now, did your dad ever talk about the interrogation?
My father would have been an old IRA man. He was a Donegal man originally.
Okay.
He would have been an old IRA man. He spoke very, very little about that time.
Yeah.
He subsequently married a Tipperary woman and stayed there. But one of the comments that he passed to me one time, it's very funny. I was at home and his eyesight was failing at the time, and this was 1980, it was jumping a long time. But he produced the documents that had come down from Donegal, where this guy had sought an old IRA pension. This was in 1980, which was 60-odd years after the Civil War. And he showed these documents to me anyway, and he said, "What do you think of them?" And I said, I said, "I never knew that you were involved in that outfit." And that was the comment I passed. And he said to me, he says, "There's a lot of things about me," he says, "you don't know and you will never know."
Wow. And by the way, when he applied for the pension, he would have to have detailed some of the activities he was involved in, isn't that correct?
He never revealed that he got the pension, or he never bore the medal, sir.
But did you ever read his request for a pension, his application?
Yes,
And what did he... Do you want to tell me about that?
It was very... what would I call it? It was it was as minimal information as possible.
Okay. Do you think he killed people when he was in the IRA?
Possibly did. Yeah. There was a letter from his commanding officer when he rejoined the Gardaí, there was a letter from him, which is on record.
Yeah.
There was a letter, he was only 5'8½" or something like that, and he was a half an inch short of the 5'9", but they reinstated him anyway.
Yeah. How long did he serve in the Gardaí?
Oh, he served 40-odd years. He went to retirement age in 1963. Well, we overlapped actually in the Gardaí.
Oh, you were in as well, okay.
Yeah.
And Liam, you're in Cork now. I presume you're retired. Are you retired?
Happily.
Ah, good man. Good man.
25 years,
good man. Now, and thank you for your service, as I say. Great work and great respect for the Gardaí in Ireland still, thankfully, unlike other countries. Now, your father, he continues to work in the Gardaí, but did he rise in the Gardaí?
No, he did. He never rose to the rank. At the time, there was lots of questions about the Brian Harriers and the S branch and detective branch and what have you. My father ended up as a chief's escort, would you believe, which was the rank that it was at the time. In other words, he was his driver and what have you.
To who? Who did he drive?
He subsequently drove a couple of Garda commissioners.
Oh, okay. That's a fairly responsible job, isn't it?
Yeah, would you believe, as a result of lots of things that happened at the time, he carried the gun most of his life.
Wow.
It was all...
Okay.
It's all history, really,
Well, let's go to living. Say, Liam, you're living history. It's your father directly involved. Now, Bridie Griffin was married to the son of Larry Griffin. Bridie, do we ever know what happened? Jim Fitzgerald / Jim Greeny, the witness that we now find out was interrogated by Liam Harkin's father. What was your father's first name, Liam?
Charlie.
Charlie Harkin. And he got the statement out of him, but that statement was subsequently challenged. But do we know, Bridie, did you ever meet Jim Fitzgerald or Jim Greeny?
No, no, I never met him.
No. And he was apparently a farm labourer,
yeah,
of low standing, as they say. He used to say, I'm not in those days.
Yeah.
And did you know that the Garda who interrogated the man who wrote the statement giving what now seems to be the true story of what happened, your father-in-law, did you know that the Garda had been sacked because of that? He got his job back, but
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
no,
incredible.
No.
Incredible.
There was another, Liam, yes. Sorry, Joe, couldn't cross you there. There was another in my own service when I came to Cork originally. I met a man by the name of Mike O'Connor. He was a sergeant in Watergrass Hill, and he was another one of the individuals that was there at the time. I discussed the case with him several times.
And what were they the heavy gang of their day or something? Where were they brought in from?
In broad terms, probably, yeah.
They were regarded as three Gardaí who would, from outside the area,
yep,
who would come in and they'd go into a room and they would get...
They were given a job to do and they did it.
Yeah, by fair means or foul. Well, he was fouled because he was caught fouling, he was sacked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, incredible.
Interrogation at that time meant interrogation.
Yeah.
There wasn't any video evidence or such equipment in use.
Well, it's incredible that there's so many people, even though it happened 90 years ago, this coming Christmas Day, that there's so many people with such a direct connection with the tragedy. And people like Bridie and Mike, direct blood relative, well, Bridie isn't, but a daughter-in-law of the dead man, still saying there's his name is on a headstone in the grave where his wife and his son are buried, and he should be in that grave as well. And it's the old tradition that somebody deserves, especially in Ireland,
there was a variation
deserves a Christian.
There was a variation on the story, which you didn't elaborate on there today. There was a variation on the story that he actually fell down the stairs in the Garda station where they were playing cards.
Yeah.
And the big deal was that they shouldn't have been even out of the station. Although at that time, single Gardaí had to live in the station and to go in and out.
Well, would that be a more benign story? That would suit. But Gardaí wouldn't have been sacked for playing cards in the Garda station.
No, but they'd been sacked for bringing a drunken boatman in and putting him to sleep upstairs.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, Faulkner, thanks, Liam. That's Liam Harkin, the son of the man who was sacked for interrogating the man, Jim Fitzgerald, who gave this statement of what had actually happened, which is the...
No, he wasn't the only one, Joe.
I know, there's three of them.
Don't give him all the blame.
No, I won't. Sorry. And sorry if I did, Liam. I apologise.
Yeah,
and as you said, he went to give on great service and gave us you as well, who gave great service as well. But Faulkner, is there any other believable theory about the death of Larry Griffin? In other words, was he playing cards in the Garda station? Was it much more?
Well, the story that about the Garda station that I have on that theory is similar, except that they were in the theory I heard that they were in the pub, and that rather than that the fight happened in the pub, that Larry Griffin was so drunk that they, according to this story, that the guards brought him back over to the barracks and put him upstairs to bed, and then they went back and left him alone, mm-hmm, and they went back to the pub, and then that they came back again later to check in on him and discovered him dead at the bottom of the stairs. But that from there on in, the motivation would have been the same in terms of covering up the whole story, because there was definitely something going on in the pub that night. There was definitely illegal drinking going on, and there was lies being told about that. The guards, the whole Garda station, in fact, in Stradbally, the whole Garda station, contingent of five guards were dismissed after this, because they were all found to be in dereliction of duty. All the accounts they wrote in their record books of their patrols they went on that day and everything like that turned out to be totally false, and it turned out to be a Garda party that was totally lacking in discipline and control, with huge difficulties of drinking and ill discipline.
Wow. So five Gardaí lost their job. Liam Harkin's father, the investigator, one of the investigating Gardaí, was one of three Gardaí who were sacked, subsequently reinstated after the change of government. So the ramifications, and there we have Bridie Griffin, a wonderful, wonderful woman, as you can hear, in good, strong fettle and health in her 99th year, saying she wants closure. They want to find the remains of her father-in-law. Okay, Focknell's just called. The book is called The Missing Postman. It's been in the shops a number of years. Mike Finnerty, the great-grandson of Larry Griffin, Liam Harkin, the son of the Garda who interrogated or got a statement from one of the, if not the only witness who was prepared to tell the full story, and Bridie Griffin. Bridie, I hope you that there is some resolution to this, because it's gone on too long, it really has. So I hope there's some resolution.
Hopefully, yeah.
Okay, Bridie, you look after yourself. It's great to hear from you. Bridie Griffin, Liam Harkin, Mike Finnerty, Fáilte Driscoll, 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.